Christmas threat to drag Candace, pregnant and all. Candace Dillard Bassett. Monique and I, we had a friendship off camera. And when we hung out, she would talk all sorts of smack about Ashley and Michael. The general consensus among us and the rest of the group is that Ashley and Michael's relationship is a ruse. Ashley's in it for money, and Michael's in it for a trophy wife. Monique would be like, Ashley's gonna get this baby, and she's gonna get the hell out. That's what I think. So then to see Monique, out of the clear blue sky, vehemently defending Ashley to me, like Ashley paid her taxes for her, like she saved her baby off a burning cliff, it just did not make sense. Monique Samuels. That's an absolute lie. I'm not a person who would just sit and trash talk somebody. I like to keep my mind positive. Candace Dillard Bassett. When Monique was threatening to drag me at that hoedown, I never thought she would because I thought there was a line that everyone knew not to cross. Monique Samuels. I wanted to throw that bottle at her head during that whole I'll drag you pregnant and all. I had to restrain myself. Candace Dillard Bassett. She's lucky I'm not someone else, because if you threaten the wrong person, saying you're going to hit them in the head with a glass bottle, and that person doesn't give a fuck about your life or the life of your unborn baby, let's just say it could have been a much worse situation. Monique Samuels. I'm a 0 to 100 type of person. I can snap at somebody, but I can very easily and quickly apologize in that moment. So I walked over and I said, you know what? I'm sorry for threatening you with the bottle. I'm gonna be a woman and apologize right now because that was out of line. Candace Dillard Bassett. Looking back, I still don't understand why Monique chose Ashley's side. Ashley screwed her within an inch of her life the year before with real defamatory, damaging information, saying she was drunk driving in a community where she claimed to have so much clout. You're threatening to become physical with me, but you let that slide and forgave Ashley? That's fishy. Amid all the drama was an allegation that catapulted the Real Housewives of Potomac back into the headlines. 3 days after the filming of Monique's rainbow baby shower, a cameraman claimed in court documents that Michael had grabbed and groped his butt. The allegation led Michael to be charged with felony assault, as well as misdemeanor improper sexual contact. Ashley Darby. Michael and I had just gotten back together after being separated. You know, doing this show can be hard on a couple because housewives were meant to share it all. So when the show first started, stuff we would normally keep private, I was bringing up on national television. That, plus the fact that we were working together on the business, had us interacting with one another in a totally different way than we had in the past. But now we were back together, stronger than ever. And then this happened. Candace Dillard Bassett. It all happened at Monique's rainbow shower, but we didn't hear about it until later into filming, when the TMZ story broke. Andy Cohen. I couldn't get over that. I was stunned when it came out. And then I was stunned when Michael reminded me on the reunion that he had grabbed my ass. I mean, I had truly forgotten that. Giselle Bryant. Michael had been grabbing ass since season one. Candace Dillard Bassett. Two of our other producers had their butts patted or grabbed by Michael. That's why we weren't surprised. Lorraine Houghton Lawson. We had heard off the record that Michael had grabbed the asses of a lot of the gay men on the producing team. Giselle Bryant. Michael likes to squeeze men's buttocks, and they don't like it. This cameraman, he took it and responded like any other straight man would in the moment. But there was no doubt in my mind that Michael squeezed the wrong ass. Monique Samuels. I felt awful that Ashley was going through all that. Like, what if it's true? This is what your husband's doing to you? But also, what if it's not true? Now you're both being dragged through the mud in the media, all while trying to have a baby after you just lost one. Ashley Darby. It wasn't until this experience that I realized that Monique was really a true friend. Because when Michael was going through his stuff in season 4, the way Monique had our backs and really helped us show the truth, it wasn't just for cameras. She could have taken joy in it and used it as an opportunity to have a storyline or a funny soundbite, but she realized the severity of the situation and was really supportive. Candace Dillard Bassett. The only reason Monique stood by Ashley's side after the butt tap was because it looked good for her on the show. She needed to be a contrarian and hold a specific position to garner more camera time. That was an unpopular position, and it was a vacant position, and she filled it. Ultimately, the charges against Michael were dismissed by a Montgomery County court due to insufficient evidence. Joshua Brown. Ashley and Michael, for all the things they've been through, are actually incredibly open about what's going on in their personal lives and with their marriage. Ashley Darby. I was not surprised my marriage would be a topic of discussion on the show. We are as polar opposite as you can get. We're from different continents, different races, different ages. There's so much for people to dissect. That's not new to me. So thankfully, I already had pretty strong armor against that. Andy Cohen. Michael's someone who, not unlike Simon Van Kempen, another Australian, really has a love-hate relationship with the camera. There's something he really must enjoy about whatever being on the show brings him. But on the other hand, he gets caught up in a lot of mess season after season. Giselle Bryant. Don't get me wrong, I like Michael. He is a wild card. When he's around, you do not know what's going to happen. You cannot predict it. The producer in me knows that's good TV. As season 5 began, a new cast member joined the show, Dr. Wendy Osefo, a Nigerian-born professor, political analyst, entrepreneur, and married mother of 3 with 4 degrees, and a penchant to speak her mind. Wendy Osefo, housewife. A friend of mine knew one of the executive producers and recommended me. Joshua Brown. We always look for women who have some sort of organic connection to the group. Wendy and Candace had worked together on a charity, and they'd both run in political circles. And Wendy had met Karen at a charity event. Candace Dillard Bassett. I love Wendy. I was so excited when she was cast. I was like, yes, we have a beautiful, dark-skinned woman who is degreed down. Karen Huger. The first time I sat down with Wendy for more than 5 minutes was on the show. And as I said on the show, I wasn't impressed. Giselle Bryant. My first scene with Wendy. She screamed at me about something, and in my mind I was like, I know she's just trying to find her footing, so I'm going to give her some slack here. After about a month or so, I could see her feeling more comfortable and being herself. And I really think Wendy is a great addition. It is extremely difficult to come into this cast, especially 5 seasons in, and meld with the group, but Wendy did just that. Candace Dillard Bassett. One of the big pieces of advice I gave Wendy when we first met was about the importance of having a moment. Wendy Osefo. That advice really changed the game for me. Candace gave it to me right before I went on my first trip, the local one at Monique's house in Newburgh. She said, "This is where things get hot. Just be prepared. And you haven't had your moment yet. This would be a good time to do that." And I said, "What are you talking about? I've spoken up." She goes, "Yeah, you've said your opinion, but you haven't had a moment. Something where we can all say, that was Wendy's moment. You need a moment." It was from that conversation that Dr. Wendy, address me correctly, was born. Season 5 ended up being a breakthrough season for The Real Housewives of Potomac, the series garnering its highest ratings yet. But it was a bittersweet success, considering the season also included a horrific physical altercation between Monique and Candace. Robin Dixon. In the beginning of the season, Candace was on thin ice with a lot of us. Candace Dillard Bassett. I spent the whole first quarter of that season trying to make up with everyone. I was fighting with Giselle, fighting with Robin, fighting with Monique. At every turn, I said I was sorry. Monique Samuels. Candace kept trying to have conversations with me, but I was not going to do it one-on-one. I wanted witnesses around, and every single time, she didn't want to talk. All of a sudden, we were at the winery, and she gets this liquid confidence to finally talk. She was trying to start an argument, and I was just laughing. Candace Dillard Bassett. It was all light stuff. I teased her about faking like she was asleep when I was leaving her log cabin in the woods. Then she was like, "You're not a mother." You know, shaming me for not having a child, it just kept escalating from there. Monique Samuels. She got her hand right in my face, just like she did with Ashley and the butter knife. Her hand was so close to my chin that it could have touched me. And I don't do hands in the face. I don't play. Candace Dillard Bassett. My hand was barely in her face. We weren't fighting, remember? Monique Samuels. So I told her, "You need to back up." And she said, "What are you gonna do? You gonna drag me?" And that just took me over the edge, because I literally gave you the warning, and now you're pushing me. Candace Dillard Bassett. That's when she flicked my hair and I flicked her vest. Monique Samuels. She swung over with a wine glass and hit me in my face. When I was hit with the glass, I pulled her head down to the table and started punching her in the back of her head. Candace Dillard Bassett. The glass did not leave my hand until after I was pulled down onto the table. I remember everyone screaming, "Monique, let go of her," but she wouldn't. All I was thinking was, I cannot let my wig come off on this camera. I cannot live in infamy on the internet as a Black woman whose wig has been ripped off and I'm fighting in my cornrows. So I was holding onto my wig. Robin Dixon. Yes, Candace is annoying as shit. Sometimes her mouth is too much. But nothing Candace did or said warranted any type of physical attack. Monique Samuels. They eventually led me to a back room, but my adrenaline was pumping. The force from the glass hitting my face caused my tooth to bust my lip on the inside. It was deep, and now I really wanted to beat her tail. Candace Dillard Bassett. I was a mess. Our co-EP was holding me like I was his child. Monique Samuels. They were trying to calm me down, and I could hear her calling me names and saying, "She's fired, she's fired." I was like, "Wow, she's still talking? If I'm going to be off the show for fighting, I'm about to whoop her ass." Candace Dillard Bassett. All of a sudden, our co-EP was like, "I need you to get in a car. Please, please, you have to go." I come to find out later, it was because Monique, who had been sequestered in the stairwell, found a way out of the barn and was running to get me. Monique Samuels. By the time I got there, she was already gone. It didn't take long for the higher-ups at Truly Original and Bravo to get involved. Lorraine Houghton Lawson. I spoke to both Monique and Candace the night of the altercation. Monique was going crazy about how Candace deserved it, and she finally got what she wanted. Candace, on the other hand, was a puddle of mush, and really has been ever since. She vacillates between cascading emotions and her anger toward Monique, but also pain, because this was someone she thought was a close friend. It was a much deeper situation than just some girl she got in a fight with. Andy Cohen. We don't like when shit like this happens. It's a bad look for the series. It's not why we created this series. The show is not meant to be the Bad Girls Club. It's not meant to be Love and Hip Hop. Monique Samuels. Andy was really there for me when all this stuff was going down. I didn't feel like I was getting support from anybody, and I wanted an unbiased ear. Someone who had been around so much of this, who could give me some advice? Candace Dillard Bassett. Do you know Andy never, ever reached out to me, ever? Not until the airing of the season when I was on Watch What Happens Live. And I have so many qualms with it, especially when I heard that he had spoken to Monique. Andy Cohen. I never reached out to Monique. She reached out to me and asked if I was available and said she wanted to speak with me. That's how that conversation happened. She wanted to plead her case and tell me her side of things. She wanted to prove to me that Candace provoked her. Monique Samuels. Andy and I had a great talk. Andy listened. He did not try to justify anything. He just said, sometimes cameras catch things and sometimes cameras don't catch things. If this is what you feel played out, stay true to what you feel happened. Maintain that. We'll sort it out when we get to see the footage and when we get to the reunion. Candace Dillard Bassett. I even reached out to Andy's assistant and asked for him to call me. Nothing. That's fucked up. I know he has well over 100 housewives, all texting and calling him all the time. But how many of them were physically attacked on camera by their co-star? The fact that he couldn't even schedule 10 minutes to reach out to me? You don't give a fuck. You are making money off of our backs and feeding your son with it. And you just don't give a fuck about us. And you can't tell me that you do. And when I saw him, I did say it to his face. Andy Cohen. I knew Candace was in constant communication with Josh and production. But if she'd left word with my office, I absolutely would have called her back. Also, if she'd told me to my face that I didn't give a fuck about her, I would certainly remember that. I don't. I do remember her being upset that I'd spoken to Monique. Joshua Brown. I am not aware of who Andy calls and doesn't call. I personally spoke to Candace many times, and I hope she feels like the network was and is very supportive of her, because we've had a lot of thoughtful and emotional conversations about what happened. Candace Dillard Bassett. Bravo didn't give a fuck about me and how traumatic and horrible this situation has been for me. Yes, I have been reached out to and approached and checked on more times than I can count. But in my eyes, they're just doing it to avoid legalities. Monique Samuels. Andy also told me something I really held on to. He said, look, not saying that anything is right, but there's a thing called cause and effect. If you keep poking a bear, the bear is going to bite back. He wasn't condoning violence or taking sides. I still owned my part in it. But he said, just do what you can. Andy Cohen. My point of view on this stuff has totally been skewed by what happened with Kenya and Portia, because I was the only person in the room that day who didn't understand that Kenya was provoking Portia and that it was about to escalate. That's why I kind of started looking at, what was Candace's role in this? That's unusual for me, because with any case of physical aggression, the person who gets physical is the one who is punished. Giselle Bryant. But this was so different. Even as provoking as Kenya was, Portia apologized profusely, immediately. She apologized to Andy Cohen. She apologized to Sherry Levine. She apologized to everybody. She didn't then go on social media and try to lie about what happened. She didn't try to vilify her castmates. We, to this day, have not seen Monique grow from this experience. Andy Cohen. The irony is that I ultimately pushed Monique on her lack of apologies at the reunion and got crucified for it by the viewers. As discussions happened behind the scenes, news of the fight almost immediately made its way to the blogs and social media. Robin Dixon. Monique leaked the story to her fans and the press right away, and we knew it was her because the details of the fight were totally skewed against Candace. Monique Samuels. I never leaked the story to bloggers. I told my family and a friend. I know who leaked it, but it wasn't me. Lorraine Houghton Lawson. Monique is intoxicated by the fame. Like, intoxicated. But at the same time, she would deny that she had anything to do with leaking this story. She'll tell you, I only told two people. Okay, well then, Monique, they told the blogs. You know what you're doing. Candace Dillard Bassett. I was attacked on social media for nearly a year before the show came out. Robin Dixon. It was really bad. They were saying Candace deserved it. That's what you get for asking to be dragged. I felt terrible for her. Days after the fight, the entire cast, sans Candace, met at Karen's house. Monique Samuels. I asked production for an all-cast scene without Candace so I could apologize for putting them in harm's way. Karen Huger. I hosted a meeting for Monique to help her get through it. I offered Candace the same opportunity, which she declined. Wendy Osefo. It was at that meeting that Monique admitted she was not remorseful. Robin Dixon. That was a problem for me. Monique could have been apologetic, but instead she put down this tough girl always right act, when in this situation there's nothing right about what she did. Giselle Bryant. If the next day Monique woke up and was like, oh my gosh, I totally screwed up. Let me make this up to Candace and the ladies. We would have been able to get on board. Instead, she doubled down. Robin Dixon. That was the last time Monique was around the entire group, until the reunion. Another topic that came up in that meeting had to do with how Black women were represented on television. Monique Samuels. Some of the women who started the show, the OGs, put themselves on a pedestal. They wanted RHOP to be the Black show that didn't act Black. I do not go with that whole campaign. The problem with that is that, number one, we should welcome who we are. Number two, everybody acts out of character, no matter what race you are. Everybody acts the fool. Robin Dixon. There's not that much representation of Black women on reality television, or on television, period. And the representation that was already out there, whether it's Love and Hip Hop, or Basketball Wives, or even Real Housewives of Atlanta, there's been instances where you've seen these women get physical and ratchet, or whatever. Candace Dillard Bassett. There's only a stigma attached to our behavior because we're Black. Because when they're cracking glasses on the edges of tables in RHOBH, smacking camera down in RHOD, throwing wine in people's faces in RHOC, or flipping tables and pulling ponytails in RHONJ, nobody says, wow, these white women are ghetto. They're dangerous. It's not talked about as it is when Black women are being human and doing the same thing. Giselle Bryant. Being a Black woman in this country is tough. We've already got every obstacle blocking our success. For you to come on this platform as a Black woman and decide it's okay to physically harm your castmate, that is a problem I can't get past. That's not how I was raised. That's not who I am. If I have an issue with you, I have a brain. I know how to talk. Ashley Darby. All the women are basically saying that Monique is a disgrace to Black people because she made a mistake. That's not fair. Giselle Bryant. There's just a different standard for Black women, and especially for housewives. Sonia gets drunk and pees in a cornfield. That's hilarious, but we could never do that. Robin Dixon. For 4 seasons, we prided ourselves on, yeah, we can call one another out, but we always know how to defuse the situation in a classy way. And the fact, in that moment, Monique went to that level, we felt like she tore down everything we represented. As the Potomac housewives were working through these feelings, Candace was working through her own traumas from the fight and ultimately filed a complaint with the District Court of Montgomery County in Maryland, which charged Monique with second-degree assault. Monique shot back by filing parallel charges. Candace Dillard Bassett. I was a mess. It was the lowest place I can recall being in recent years. It got to the point where I could not get through an hour without having a mini panic attack. Monique Samuels. About 10 days after the fight, I started to feel remorseful. I had a conversation with one of my producers and said, I really want to have a talk with Candace one-on-one, or perhaps with her husbands. And then, that day, I got an email from her attorney threatening legal action. And I took a screen grab and sent it to my producer saying, never mind. Candace Dillard Bassett. I didn't file anything for almost 2 weeks. I didn't plan to. But watching the lie after lie after lie that she was putting out there, I was like, you want to go to jail. You want to be publicly embarrassed and flogged because you're fucking trying me. Monique Samuels. Candace filed a complaint against me, knowing what it could do to my family. I have 3 kids, and she had no guilt about it, no remorse, knowing fully well that she hit me with that glass. Candace Dillard Bassett. About a week later, Monique filed counter charges, and there will never be words to describe how vile, low, and disgusting Monique is for doing that. She is the lowest end of the totem pole of humanity. Monique Samuels. The whole thing ended up getting dropped. After the state's attorney reviewed the footage, they realized, okay, this was a mutual fight, and dismissed it. As Candace and Monique's clash worked its way through the legal system, the network and Monique came to an agreement about her role for the rest of the season. Monique Samuels. I told Bravo's legal department I would finish out the remainder of the season with the cast members who I felt comfortable filming with and who felt comfortable filming with me, so long as I didn't have to go on the cast trip or go to the finale. Candace Dillard Bassett. I was told that she was not given a choice to film with us anymore. Monique Samuels. The network did not penalize me at all. Not a financial demotion, nothing. Noah Sampton. Monique was put at arm's length from the rest of the housewives, which means she wasn't as much of a part of the show. And that's obviously a form of punishment in terms of the amount of episodes she ends up in and her relationship with the rest of the women. There are repercussions in a lot of different ways. Leading into the premiere of season 5, troubles between Monique and her castmates only got worse on social media. Gisele Bryant. The coronavirus pandemic pushed our premiere back a month. And the day they told us they were pushing the show back, we were on a call with Bravo, and they asked us if we could have a unified response on social media. They said, we'll send you a picture and give you a comment about what to say. We were all in agreement, and then Monique chose to post the photo with our faces scratched out. Robin Dixon. Then we decided to do the Don't Rush TikTok challenge video with the whole cast to assure the fans that we'd be back. Monique was super excited to participate, but the day before the videos were due, she texted me and was like, I'm not going to get the video done because I'm so busy. And then when the video came out and everyone was asking, where's Monique? She was like, I didn't want to be involved in that fakery. All of a sudden, we had all these people coming after us, calling us mean girls because Monique wasn't in the video. Gisele Bryant. Then she released a song boasting about dragging Candace. Candace Dillard Bassett. I'm not talking about that piece of trash song. Next question. Gisele Bryant. I recognized Monique was good for the show, but I am going to be honest with you. I couldn't get past all this. She would have to do a lot of apologizing. At this point, you're scratching my face out of pictures, and the song, and the TikTok. Now you have to apologize to me, because we've all said, don't worry about us, Monique, just apologize to Candace. We could get past this if you just own it. But now? Now you've got to apologize to me. When the show did finally premiere, Bravo execs and producers had a decision to make. How much of the fight would they show? Andy Cohen. We wound up showing more of what happened than we ever have in the past. And that was really Francis Berwick's call. We have gotten so much blowback over the years about cutting away from stuff. So she said, why don't you show what really happened? Let people decide what they think. And that's what we did. Joshua Brown. I hope viewers will appreciate that it gets portrayed in a very documentary way. There's no music. There are no interview bites. You're just seeing the event. The viewer can make their judgment about what happened. Lorraine Houghton Lawson. Of course, by the time of the reunion, Monique was in the hot seat. It was the first time she'd seen everyone since the fight, and there was a lot to explore. Andy Cohen. Our question was, are you really repentant? Do you really feel bad about this? Because when you're releasing a song about dragging someone, it's hard. Lorraine Houghton Lawson. We offered Monique a chance to return for season 6. I likened it to the situation with Phaedra and Candy in season 9. After Phaedra got fired, a lot of viewers felt like they were robbed of an ending to that story. So we wanted fans to go on a journey with Monique and Candace, allowing them to see what could happen next. Would they be able to make up? Would they be able to coexist? We were excited to explore that. Andy Cohen: I would have never imagined that we would consider bringing Monique back, but when you look at public opinion about this, it wasn't as cut and dried. Candace Dillard Bassett: I was never, ever going to film with her again, and I was really struggling as to whether I even wanted to come back to the show. But in the end, I decided I was not going to let this gutter trash brat fuck with my money. Monique Samuels: There was no way I was moving forward with Candace. I tried to move forward with her at the last reunion, and no sooner than we started filming again did she start being shady. Karen Huger: A great deal of humility and accountability would have been required for them to move on. I know they could do it, but it would be hard. Monique Samuels: There are always going to be people who think I was wrong in this situation. There's nothing I can do to change that. Do I wish that the whole thing never happened? Absolutely. Do I wish that I just would have walked away? Absolutely. I did not realize in the moment that it would escalate the way it did. But, you know, we just gotta live and move on and hope that we learn from our past. Of course, Real Housewives of Potomac's legacy goes far beyond its season 5 battle. Andy Cohen: It's been a dream. When you have a great cast like this, to stick with them and watch them grow, the Potomac women, they're still friends. Their relationships have not gotten all fucked up by the show and the stuff happening outside the show. That's really the goal. Giselle Bryant: I would love there to be another all-black Housewives show. There should be a Black Housewives out of Chicago. It would be a hit. Part 9. Cowgirl Country. The Real Housewives of Dallas. Premiere date, April 11th, 2016. The tone was much lighter. It was freeing. They had a lot of fun. There were hilarious antics and light hijinks, which I loved. That's classic Dallas. Rich Bai. Rich Bai, founder and president, Goodbye Pictures. We started to get tapped into Dallas society and the world of charity galas and how all of that works. The working title for the series, when we sold it, that got greenlit was How to Make It in Dallas. And one of the underlying narratives, themes that we all began with creatively, was how the women on that first season maintain and kind of boost their social standing within that social milieu of Dallas society, which is pretty much governed by charity galas. And so that was really our focus in season 1. Andy Cohen: We'd cast in Dallas once before for a potential Housewives installment. We also cast in Houston. Neither of them felt right. But when this show came in, it felt like something special. We were going to call the show Charity Wives or something, not Real Housewives, and decided while shooting or shortly after it wrapped to call it Real Housewives. So we were stuck with all this charity talk, which the viewers hated. Rich Bai: Leanne Locken was our first cast member. She sold herself as the gatekeeper to the charity galas that elite circles of the social strata in Dallas occupied. Leanne Locken, housewife: I was active in at least 60 charities in the city. And of those 60 charities, they all would have a kickoff party, a patron party, and the check presentation. So that's 240 events out of 365 days in a year. It was my life. Rich Bai: Leanne also let us know that she was the keeper of a treasure trove of scandalous secrets that belonged to the who's who of Dallas society. Andy Cohen: Leanne was a dominating personality. There's no doubt about that. She commanded your attention in a way that some people loved and some people hated. I also personally was obsessed with the fact that Leanne was a carny. I thought it was brilliant. Once Leanne, a former pageant queen and actress, was brought on, she recruited one of her friends, Tiffany Hendra, a married Texas-born actress and Asian-American spitfire, She knew from their modeling days. Andy Cohen. Tiffany was married to this Australian rocker, Aaron Hendra, and he looked just like Keith Urban. I don't know who dubbed him it first, but he quickly earned the nickname among fans as Keith Suburban. Rich Pie. Tiffany had experience with the entertainment industry in LA, which involved some drug abuse and wild living. But she had picked herself up, dusted herself off, and relocated to Dallas, where one of her closest friends, Leanne, could help guide her through the world of high society. There was something very compelling about that. Tiffany Hendra, housewife. The whole thing felt like this beautiful dream unfolding in front of my eyes. I left Hollywood only to book my biggest game. Leanne and Tiffany weren't the only pair of pals cast in season one. Brandi Redmond and Stephanie Holman were also close friends, two married mothers who had met through their husbands. Stephanie Holman, housewife.
Brandi and I actually auditioned for a Bravo show years prior when our kids were babies. It was supposed to be about a group of friends and couples. We were actually told we were going to get contracts, but they couldn't find a great mix of girls, so the show turned into Most Eligible Dallas, which was all about singles.
Rich Pie. Brandi and Stephanie didn't come as a package. We interviewed them separately, just like Leanne and Tiffany. But in their separate casting interviews, they each spoke at great length about their friendship and their history together. There's a bit of a Thelma and Louise quality to their relationship. Andy Cohen. Brandi was a former Cowboys cheerleader, which I just loved, and she's a ginger, which always gets high marks in my book. But the thing I loved the most about her was that she had this crazy sense of humor. She was just fun. Rounding out the cast was Carrie Duber, a nurse and mother who was married to a successful plastic surgeon. Carrie Duber, housewife. I was the only person on the show who had zero experience in any facet of entertainment, which is funny to me because I'm probably the best at reality TV out of all of them, because I'm most myself and most entertaining. Andy Cohen. I was really into Carrie's husband, Mark's obsession with her clothes. There was something very Simon Van Kemp in there. Before filming started, the cast gathered for lunch to meet for the first time. Tensions emerged immediately between Leanne and the team of Brandi and Stephanie. Leanne Locken.
I'll be honest, I came off really rude that day. When I go into a situation with new people, I often try to dominate the conversation because I feel comfortable and safe when I'm in control. So that's what I did.
Sezen Chavusholo. Even in the casting reels, you had a sense of Leanne always feeling a little less than around the other society women who had money, and a sense of Brandi and Stephanie feeling poo-pooed by the Dallas charity world because they didn't play by the rules. That was the original source of their conflict. Leanne Locken.
After that lunch, I tried to connect with Brandi and Stephanie off camera. They came to a charity event called Positivity, which benefits a program serving women living with HIV/AIDS. But when I saw them at the next filming, a charity gala kickoff party we threw at the home of Marie Race, who was a friend that season, they were laughing about me. Brandi was telling everyone that she does this impression of me, which I knew was mean-spirited.
Marie Race, friend. Leanne and Brandi, they both have really strong personalities, and they each arrived at my party that night with some kind of preconceived notion about the other. Leanne Locken.
Toward the end of the night, Brandi came up to me and said, "Can I talk to you about something you said the other day?" And I thought, oh my God, this is it. She heard me share my story about being molested as a child at Positivity, and we're going to sit down and have a meaningful conversation. Yeah, no. Instead, she said, "It was really selfish of you to share your story." So after about 5 minutes of that lecture, I got up and left. Tiffany came over because she knew I was upset, and I was like, "I'm not okay. Brandi is a fucking bitch."
That was only the first of Leanne's explosions that season. Weeks later, cameras rolled as she got into a battle with Tiffany and a passing trolley car. Carrie Duber.
Leanne came in real hot that night.
Tiffany Hendra.
At that point, there was so much stress and division in the group. It was Brandy, Stephanie, and Carrie against Leanne. And the two groups just weren't talking. Marie was throwing a cocktail party, and Leanne and I were off talking with our friends who were there.
Leanne Locken.
I wasn't going to go anywhere near Brandy and Stephanie and Carrie if I didn't have to.
Tiffany Hendra.
The problem is, at group events, producers want the cast interacting. So a producer came up to me and said, "This is ridiculous. Leanne hasn't even said hello to the girls. Can you bring her over?" And the second I did, Brandy started attacking her. I said to myself, "What the fuck did I just do?"
Leanne Locken.
I just remember Brandy saying to me, "I'm supposed to address you as Miss since you're older than me." And I was like, "Oh, we're talking about age now?" That triggered me, and I just lost it. You know, I'm really good at losing it.
Tiffany Hendra.
It all went downhill after that.
Leanne Locken.
You have to remember, and this is not an excuse, but I was very drunk that night. I was drinking champagne nonstop. I probably had 12 glasses. I call those ART, A-R-T, alcohol-related tragedies. I paint a lot of art in my life.
Sezen Cavusoglu.
That's why you saw Leanne curb her drinking the rest of her time on the show, because that particular incident was not helped by alcohol.
Tiffany Hendra.
When Leanne stormed out, I was yelling after her, but she would not stop.
Leanne Locken.
I didn't want to fight on camera. That's why I left. So I flipped her off.
Tiffany Hendra.
You don't get to flip me off when I'm the one person who has defended your ass since the day I stepped foot on Dallas soil.
Leanne Locken.
I said to her, "Thanks for having my back," which I knew would piss her off, but I was really tired of being the pissed off bitch all season long.
Tiffany Hendra.
She was screaming, "It's your fault," you know, blaming me. And I was simmering like, "What the fuck?"
Leanne Locken.
At some point, she pushed me, which I really don't even remember.
Tiffany Hendra.
That was very hard to watch. I literally couldn't believe it when I saw it back. I've always been a spitfire, but you have to push me far to get like that.
Leanne Locken.
I was more upset about the camera, which is why finally I yelled, "Stop filming me," and pushed the camera. I had already asked them not to film me. In my world, if I tell you to stop filming me, that is your warning. You get one.
Tiffany Hendra.
When she screams, "Leave me alone," and took her shoes off, hit that trolley, and walked across the street, I knew she needed to be left alone so she could cool off.
Leanne Locken.
Here's the thing about Tiffany and me. We know how the other one works. You have a fucking blow up and you separate. You give yourself a 24-hour cooling down period. Then you give yourself some time to process how you really feel. Then you have a text or a conversation about getting together. Then you have a get together, fight on Friday, break on Saturday, process on Sunday, Sunday night communicate, Monday lunch.
Tiffany Hendra.
To this day, we're still best friends.
The same can't be said of Leanne and Marie, who were also close friends before filming began. The two had a massive falling out toward the end of season one. It was one of the most talked about battles in the show's history, especially because most of it happened off camera, while on the cast trip to Austin.
Andy Cohen. The amount of talk surrounding poop on RHOD is unparalleled and odd.
Sezen Cavusoglu.
I really can't believe we're talking about this, but okay. This story had been circulating that Leanne pooped her pants one time. It was her birthday, and she wanted to look skinny, so she took laxatives. But then she drank a lot and had an accident and couldn't make it to the bathroom. The cast members all heard it, and on the bus ride to Austin, Brandy and Stephanie brought it up.
Tiffany Hendra.
It was a way to poke at Leanne and upset her. They wanted her to get mad.
Sezen Cavusoglu.
Leanne shrugged it off. but she really held Marie responsible because she thought Marie was the one spreading that story. Marie Race. It's funny, I didn't pick up that Leanne was upset with me. I had no clue what she was pissed about. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. That night, Leanne confronted Marie. Marie Race. I went down to the kitchen to get some water. As I was reaching into the fridge, Leanne came behind me and started screaming, and I mean, this was a blood-curdling scream. Leanne Locken.
I wasn't screaming. I was just talking really loud. But I was pissed as fuck.
Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Everybody else had gone to bed, so it was just the two of them. And Leanne kind of lost her mind on Marie. Leanne Locken.
I was hurt. And when I feel hurt, I use my words to hurt people back.
Marie Race. She threatened to kill me. She was screaming, I'm going to kill you. How could you tell them? Leanne Locken.
I told Marie I'm going to fucking kill you. But I didn't mean that literally. For me, that means you're dead to me. You don't exist.
Marie Race. Leanne felt like someone betrayed her. She felt like someone went to the enemy with this humiliating story. And she immediately thought it was me because I was the one who was nice to them. Leanne Locken.
The only people who knew that story were me, Tiffany, and Marie. I know Tiffany didn't say anything. I know I didn't say anything. The only person left was Marie.
Marie Race. Meanwhile, as Leanne is yelling at me, she's also charging at me. I dodged her at first and went in the other direction, with the island between us. We were basically running around the kitchen island, me being chased and her pursuing. Leanne Locken.
I was trying to have a conversation with her.
Marie Race. There was a large crystal bowl on the island that she picked up and slammed at me. She actually threw it at my chest, but she missed and it hit the edge of the island and shattered on the floor. I don't know how long the whole thing lasted. It felt like 5 minutes, but it was probably more like 90 seconds. Carrie Duber. I was upstairs and heard screaming, so I ran to the top of the stairs to see what was going on. I immediately thought, production is going to be so pissed they're not here. So that's why I whipped out my iPhone and started filming. Everyone else had their heads in their asses, but I'm a hard worker and knew they'd want this for the show. If only I knew anything about holding the phone horizontally at that time, instead of shooting it vertically. Rich Bai. Carrie didn't capture all of it, so it wasn't conclusive as to what exactly had been said. The allegation was that Leanne, at one point, had picked up a shard of glass and held it across the kitchen island from Marie and threatened to slit her throat, which Leanne ended up denying. Leanne Locken.
Everyone was like, we have you on tape telling Marie, I'm going to gut you carny style. First of all, they didn't have it on tape or else they would have played it. And second of all, I have never in my life threatened to gut someone, let alone like a carny. What does that even mean?
Carrie Duber. I don't know if Leanne was just wasted, but that definitely scared the absolute shit out of me. Stephanie Holman.
There were no cameras and no producers there, which made it even scarier because you didn't know what could happen.
Carrie Duber. It's probably what prevented us from being friends that year and in season two, too. I was like, there's no way in hell I can be friends with someone who behaves that way. Leanne Locken.
I did apologize to Marie the next day.
Marie Race. Leanne apologized because production made her. Rich Bai. The whole storyline revolving around Leanne allegedly threatening Marie's life was a bit much for a Housewives franchise. It was too extreme. Even the motivation for that to happen, you know, Leanne shitting herself at a charity event, was totally beneath Housewives. It was too lowbrow. Season 1 of The Real Housewives of Dallas premiered on Bravo on April 11, 2016. The 11-episode season delivered big drama, but fans were highly critical of two major elements in the show's DNA. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. We got so much negative feedback about the charity element. Every episode had a charity event, and that was too much. There needed to be other reasons for these women to gather and spend time together. Andy Cohen. It really turned off viewers. They just hated it. Carrie Duber. I hated it too. I love giving money to charities, but the charity gala scene, I don't find that super fulfilling. It's always the same 20 people. Leanne Locken.
We burned so many bridges in the charity scene that first season anyway. I don't think we could have spent much more time on it unless we all started our own charities. And that's all thanks to Brandy and Stephanie.
Tiffany Hendra. Brandy and Stephanie love talking about farting and shit. Carrie Duber. They have a very juvenile sense of humor. Stephanie Holman.
All that poop talk and fart jokes we were making, that was stuff I figured would never see the light of day. Yes, Brandy and I are playful people, but we were really just trying to make the cameraman laugh and annoy the producers. Why would they use stuff where we were being stupid and making poo jokes?
Marie Reyes. I remember people going, why are they always talking about charity and poop? I mean, it was in every episode. Leanne Locken.
It was disgusting. And because of them and their prank at Mad Hatter's, my reputation in the charity world was ruined.
Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Oh my God, yes, the Mad Hatter's tea. Leanne Locken.
You have to understand, Mad Hatter's is the best charity event. It's an afternoon tea luncheon, but it's also a fashion show and a hat contest. Every year there's a theme and 8 or 9 categories you can compete in. It's just so fun, and it's attended by the who's who of Dallas.
Sezen Çavuşoğlu. That was a charity event that we were so proud to have gotten into. When we started filming the show, a lot of places shut us out. They did not want us to bring our cameras and our mess. Their words, not mine. There were really big events in the Dallas charity calendar we couldn't shoot. So when we got permission to film at Mad Hatter's, we were ecstatic. That was a very big deal. Sherry Levine. We were over the moon. It epitomized Dallas society. Everyone of note was there, all dressed in their charity tee best, wearing crazy hats. You had to watch and you had to smile. Perfect definition of a housewife event. Stephanie Holman.
Brandy and I wanted to make a little bit of a mockery of the event because it is really ridiculous that women spend so much money to go to an event where they wear these crazy hats and give themselves prizes. So Brandy joked, I'm just going to wear a shit hat.
Leanne Locken.
I didn't even notice Brandy's hat when I saw it. When you looked at it in person, you didn't see the turds she had glued on it. I was like, you look gorgeous, and kept going. The problem was, Brandy's turds started falling off her hat, and she thought it would be funny to go to the bathroom and leave them on the sink where the other women were washing their hands. And women of a certain age in a certain generation do not find shit humor funny.
Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Brandy Redman is a joker who always wants to say fuck you to tradition, for lack of a better term. Her poop hat was a giant middle finger to Dallas society. But Brandy also knew the hat would get Leanne's ire. That's why she wore it, and why she then started putting the fake poop on Leanne's chair. Leanne Locken.
I still pay for it even now. Women see me at Mad Hatter's, turn their back, and walk away. These are the same women who used to embrace me and say hello. Now, Brandy's response to that would be, who gives a fuck? They weren't your real friends. And maybe she's right. But you know what I used to have in Dallas? Respect. Her dog shit ruined that. And it's not just me, it's everyone. No one on our show is respected by anybody in Dallas anymore.
Stephanie Holman.
The city of Dallas hated us because of moments like that. Everybody here felt like we were going to make them look bad. But we're not on the show to represent all of Texas. We're just here for entertainment.
Rich Bye. We've since moved away from the potty humor and have encouraged Brandy and Stephanie to do practical jokes and find other ways to express their sense of humor. Andy Cohen. Making those changes after season one, dropping the charity element, changing up the humor, helped the show improve. It's rare you strike lightning on the first try. In Dallas's case, it needed time to find its way. The show also needed some new blood, and another casting search brought producers a few options, though none stood out as much as Cameron Westcott. The mother of two was married into one of Dallas's most prestigious families, though it was her love of all things pink that caught the eyes of producers. Andy Cohen. Cameron was like a living, breathing Barbie doll. Cameron Westcott, housewife.
The call from casting came and my heart kind of dropped because Housewives was my favorite TV show on the planet. I swear I've watched every city. So it felt so real to think they wanted me to be a part of it.
Stephanie Holman.
When Cameron joined the show, I was like, this girl is a walking Saturday Night Live skit. Because she would do these crazy facial expressions and she would get mad at the craziest things. I didn't know if she was pretending or if she was for real.
Cameron Westcott.
People wrote me off as a dumb blonde in the beginning, but they don't realize that I'm actually laughing at myself. The producers misunderstood that in my first season. That's changed as they've gotten to know me and realized that I am, in fact, someone who is a lot more savvy than she seems.
The show also added Deandra Simmons, who had already gone through casting for season one. Back then, it hadn't worked out, but this time around was a fit. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Bringing in Deandra and Cameron felt like no-brainers to us. They were grounded in Dallas in a way the other women weren't. Deandra Simmons, housewife. I'm the only person on the cast who was actually born and raised in Dallas. I'm sixth generation. I'm old school Dallas. I did have reservations about joining, but at the same time, I had to sit down with my husband and my mother, and we'd kind of like weigh the pros and cons. I know Andy loves my mother.
Andy Cohen.
Who doesn't love Mama D?
Rich Bai.
Deandra's affluent. She swims in these high society circles. She's got a sharp tongue and this unique relationship with her mother. Oh, and Bravo had seen her a year earlier, so I knew there was interest there. She kind of checked all the boxes.
Sezen Çavuşoğlu.
We had looked at a lot of interesting other women before Deandra, but it was important that there was an organic connection to the cast, and Deandra had that. She was connected to all the women in some way and was good friends with Leanne.
Leanne Locken.
I was really thrilled at the idea of Deandra joining because I felt like, good, I'm going to have an ally.
Deandra Simmons.
It shocked people out of their seats when they found out I was going to do the show because they thought, why is Deandra Simmons doing a Real Housewives show? She has standing in Dallas society. This show is controversial. Why would she do this? But for me, it was a business decision. I had concerns, but I weighed the pros and cons and realized it would be good in the long run.
Leanne Locken.
Oh, please. There were no concerns. Deandra was so excited to be a housewife. She showed up at a party in one of our friends' backyard wearing a t-shirt that said Housewives. That was before we even started filming.
There was one other casting decision made ahead of season two. Though she was a founding Dallas housewife, Tiffany wasn't asked to return.
Tiffany Hendra.
I don't like the word fired because it implies I did something wrong when I didn't do anything wrong.
Rich Bai.
She didn't. Tiffany is such a sweet woman. But when we looked at our cast as a whole, it felt like we could move on without her.
Leanne Locken.
I was really surprised when they said Tiffany wasn't coming back. I really thought after season one that they weren't going to ask me back because I was dangerous.
Stephanie Holman.
I will say to this day, Tiffany's always been very supportive. When she shows up at filming events, she's the biggest cheerleader. That doesn't always happen when people leave. Some people are very bitter, but she's never been that person. I really like her.
Though Leanne lost an ally when Tiffany left, she gained an unexpected one around the same time. Before filming season two, Leanne and Brandy buried the hatchet and formed a friendship, just as Brandy and Stephanie's bond fell apart. Leanne Locken.
After our first season was done airing, I ran into Brandy at the Hotel Zaza one night. I guess she does a staycation there every year. She saw me and jumped in my lap screaming, "Leanne, I love you!" And all the bullshit between us just didn't seem to matter anymore. It never even got brought up. She was drunk, I was drunk, and we just laughed and had fun.
Stephanie Holman.
When season one came out, it was really hard for me. I did not know how to handle it. I internalized the negative reception in Dallas and didn't want to go out. Didn't want to go to people's homes. And Brandy took it as if I was shutting her out and not wanting to be her friend.
Leanne Locken.
Brandy befriended me after that. She started texting me, and that's when she told me she and Stephanie weren't speaking.
Stephanie Holman.
I'm not exaggerating when I say that one day, Brandy just stopped talking to me. She would not answer my calls. It was the strangest thing.
Sherry Levine. It always bothers me to watch friendships of convenience on Housewives. Nobody wants that in their own life. Why would they want that on a TV show? I also think it's one reason why people become obsessed with the series. Trying to suss out the manipulations from the genuine. When people see something genuine, they just love it. It makes them love those people. Cameron Westcott.
I'll never forget. The first group filming I went to, it was Mark Duber's birthday, and Brandy came in very upset, eyeing Stephanie down the whole time. There was a lot of awkwardness, and we were all in the middle of this friendship storm.
Carrie Duber. At the same time Leanne and Brandy were getting close, I was really there for Stephanie. One day, when we weren't filming, I went to her house, which at the time was all the way out in fucking Irving. It took me forever to get there. And I brought her flowers and sat there while she cried to me about Brandy.
Leanne Locken. I really tried my best not to get involved. I had my own issues with Stephanie, but wanted to be there for Brandy as a friend. Remember when we went to Carrie's sushi party and Stephanie told Brandy, "I really want to talk to you," and I was like, "Call her, that's what phones are for." That was because Brandy told me, "I don't want to talk to Stephanie tonight. Please don't make me talk to her." I was sticking up for Brandy as I would for any friend. You tell me you don't like tomatoes, trust me, there will never be a tomato on your plate. I'll pick them off for you, that's just who I am.
Carrie Duber. Was their friendship ever at risk of actually being lost, though? I mean, Leanne and I thought Brandy and Stephanie were really in a fight. But looking back on it now, I really believe there was no fight. They orchestrated it to have a storyline, which is just sad. Leanne Locken.
Yeah, back then, I really believed my friendship with Brandy was real. Now, I realize she was just trying to get me to attack Stephanie. I was being played.
Stephanie Holman.
It really wasn't put on for the show. We were having problems.
Andy Cohen. Brandy and Stephanie's friendship falling apart was a bummer for us because we love their friendship. It resonated as deeply as Bethany and Jill for viewers and was one of the foundations of the show. I was none too pleased to hear they weren't speaking.
Sezen Cavusoglu.
If we weren't around, Brandy and Stephanie could have dragged their fight out for much, much longer. They wanted to reconcile. They just didn't know how to go about it. Us being there almost facilitated that. I was very proud of them for how fast they put it behind them. These things can really drag on, and it just brings the show down. You don't want to continue watching the same fight over and over again.
Stephanie Holman.
Looking back now, our fight was a good thing because our friendship was based on hanging out with our husbands, drinking, and going on vacations. We'd never fought because there was never a situation where we would quarrel or disagree. And in season one, we blindly agreed with everything the other said. That's what we thought friendship should be. We have a much healthier relationship now. Our disagreement in season two released us from that feeling that loyalty meant you always agree on stuff.
Cameron Westcott.
But Stephanie does always agree with Brandy. I mean, they are a package deal.
Deandra Simmons. That's true. They protect each other. They only kind of went against each other with this fight. They've remained close since then.
Leanne Locken.
Once they made up, Brandy wanted nothing to do with me. She realized she needed Stephanie for the show, and she turned on me.
Ultimately, Cameron, Deandra, and Leanne formed a tight threesome in season two, and Cameron found herself in a battle against Brandy and Stephanie once the two were back together.
Cameron Westcott.
I did have a preconceived notion about Brandy going into the show, but I really tried with her that first season. I was hoping we could be friends, but from the moment I met her, she was totally cold. I tried to talk to her, and she gave me this smirk and brushed me off. It got to a point where I had to tell her in Mexico, I'm not okay with you burping in my face. I'm not okay with you putting your feet in my dish. I'm not okay with all this other gross stuff you've been doing. But she and Stephanie just laughed at me. They looked at me like, you're the new girl. You'll go quick.
Stephanie Holman.
Cameron and I just rubbed each other the wrong way. I've always been the kind of person who hates rules and society, and she loves rules and society. I like being goofy and inappropriate. She doesn't. And Cameron, she felt like my attitude was a big slap in the face to everything she stood for. She felt attacked.
Cameron Westcott.
Felt attacked? I was attacked. They literally chased me around with a dildo.
Leanne Locken.
Brandy and Stephanie always find someone to pick on. They make a game out of it. That's just what they do.
Cameron Westcott.
I was actually upset about the dildo thing. And uncomfortable. I've never been around behavior like that in my whole life. Not even in college. I grew up sheltered and my girlfriends and I don't talk about that stuff. It was not something I wanted to be seen with on national television.
Leanne Locken.
I remember being on the boat saying to Brandy and Stephanie, listen, you know she doesn't like this dildo. I get that Brandy is drinking and thinks this is funny. But then, Stephanie, you need to be sober enough to tell your best friend to stop. But as I was trying to have that conversation, they started playing tug of war with the fucking dildo.
Cameron Westcott.
I literally was crying to a producer saying, I can't be around this. Those girls are trashy. I was such a diva. And I didn't know the cameras were there, which was my fault. But Brandy was hanging off the boat, swinging around a dildo. I mean, it was trashy.
Perhaps no one had a tougher time that season than Carrie, who fought against insidious claims about her marriage and her husband's sexuality.
Carrie Duber.
In season one, when questions about Mark's sexuality came up, he was like, this is so stupid. Are you joking me? He laughed it off at first, like, yeah, I'm well-dressed and I look good. Fuck off. And it didn't bother me because I love him. I love that he's stylish. He looks good. And he fucks me every single day, so it's not like I was concerned.
Mark Duber, house husband.
I'm very confident in my sexuality and my love of fashion. The gay jokes? They don't bother me because I know they're not true.
Carrie Duber.
But it took a turn when it started negatively affecting our kids, who were in high school at the time. They got bullied and taunted, so Mark came on the season one reunion to defend himself. He was like, this is a 1970s stereotype that we have to get over. He turned it into a teachable moment. But once my co-stars realized we weren't really upset about the gay rumors, the story became, well, how did Mark and Carrie really get together? And Mark and I were very honest. We worked together prior to dating. There was no cheating. We didn't have an affair. We were friends. I was dating guys like Lance Armstrong and Derek Jeter. And after Mark's marriage ended, we fell in love. That's the truth. But all of a sudden, I was being called a homewrecker.
Leanne Locken.
Several people told me that. I only brought it up because Carrie agitated me. She had a tendency to talk down to me, and I just cut her off at her ankles.
Carrie Duber. Leanne didn't seem to like me from the jump. The first season, I got close to Brandy and Stephanie instead. I cared about them. I thought they cared about me, but I've since come to find out they didn't. Leanne Locken.
They didn't. Because Brandy in season two, while she was acting like my friend, was talking major shit about Carrie and doing everything she could to get me to go against her. And that's how the whole "they're just hands" things came out.
Leanne is referring to one of the Real Housewives of Dallas's most infamous scenes, in which Leanne told Brandy that Mark had been involved in sexual activities with men at a local gay bar called The Roundup, and then compared her hands to knives. Leanne Locken.
Oh, Lord. Okay, here's what happened. I was getting my boobs done, and Rich couldn't drive me to the surgery. That's why Brandy took me. And in retrospect, I should never have agreed to that. Because if Brandy wasn't there, I never would have had that monologue. You see, the doctors told me to take a diazepam at home so that when I got to the surgery center, I would be calm and relaxed. Well, I did that. But during the car ride, Brandy brought up all this shit Carrie had been saying to discredit my doctor. She agitated me the whole time. So by the time I arrived, they said, "You're going to have to take another one." And that just put me over the edge. I was gone by that point.
Rich Bai. Leanne had been given the goofy juice. Leanne Locken.
I wasn't just goofy, I was gone. On Valium, I would have done anything. You could have convinced me to fuck a donkey. I mean, I was out of it. By the time I was doing that soliloquy, I was not even present. I saw the footage and I was like, oh my God, did I fucking say that?
Rich Bai. That audio is the fucking best. That moment behind the closed door at her plastic surgeon's office? I don't need knives. I've got my hands. That is insane. Leanne Locken.
Never in my life have I ever said, "They're not knives, they're just hands." What fucking normal human says that? No normal human. I don't even remember saying it. I was on 2-diazepam. And I don't do drugs. I have never done illegal drugs.
Andy Cohen. She did say it, and it was iconic. Rich Bai. Honestly, it was like listening to a serial killer. There was a cold detachment in the tenor and tone of what she said, in addition to the words themselves, that literally put chills up my spine. Leanne Locken.
Mine too. It was freaky.
Carrie Duber. Later, Brandy called and proceeded to tell me that Leanne had threatened to kill me, and she told me the stuff she said about Mark at the Roundup. Leanne Locken.
I was never planning on saying anything about the Roundup on the show. I had heard the rumor, but it wasn't something I was going to repeat.
Carrie Duber. She has apologized profusely, and I've forgiven her. Mark Duber. We both have. Leanne Locken.
And that means everything to me. I apologized to them both and prayed every night that they'd forgive me and that we could move forward. I never brushed it off. I never told either of them to just get over it. I've always listened and told them every time. What I did was horrible. I'm sorry.
Carrie Duber. And the thing is, at the time, I thought Brandy was looking out for me by calling and telling me what Leanne had done. But looking back on it, it's clear Brandy provoked Leanne. She was just as much a part of that conversation, if not more so, because Leanne was on something. Cameron Westcott. Oh, it was a total setup, put upon by Brandy. Watch it back. It all seemed to come out of nowhere completely. Leanne Locken.
A producer told me that Brandy walked out of that room and went right up to them and said, "Please tell me you got all that." She knew exactly what she was doing.
Carrie Duber. Do I think Leanne's innocent? No. Those words, the hands and knives shit, that was her. Leanne doesn't sugarcoat stuff, and when she feels a certain way, she'll tell you. But I know damn well that Brandy's not innocent either. Cameron Westcott. I feel bad for Leanne because after that, those girls were like,
Leanne's too dangerous to film with us. She wanted to kill Carrie. When that's not what was happening at all.
Leanne Locken.
Brandy plays innocent, like I'm fully responsible for trying to hurt Carrie. But if you remember, she was the one who said that Carrie was the nanny to Mark's children before they started dating. That wasn't me.
Carrie Duber.
That's when Brandy crossed the line for me. She came over to my house the night the first season of Potomac premiered. While she was there, she talked to my stepdaughter, who was probably 15 at the time, and asked her how long she'd known me. My stepdaughter said, a long time. She used to babysit when she worked for my dad. That was all true, but Brandy completely warped it into this story that I was the nanny when I started dating Mark. It was not true, and my stepdaughter was absolutely wrecked about that. She's gone to therapy for it, and Brandy's never apologized, not once. To help clear things up, Mark once again returned to the reunion stage, though his appearance this time around was a surprise to the entire cast. Mark Duber. I was highly reluctant to show up at the season 2 reunion, but I got a whole mess of phone calls from a whole lot of people at the production company and executive level, all encouraging me to be there. Cameron Westcott. None of us knew Mark was coming. When he showed up, that was just a total shock. Mark Duber. One of my requirements, if I were to show up, was that no one could know about it. I said, you're going to make it a surprise. If I catch wind that anyone knows I'm there, that's the end of it. I'm not going to step foot on that stage. Carrie Duber. Yep, we were sick of losing. They would all plot and plan, and we didn't want anyone to plan. Mark found redemption at the reunion, but Leanne wasn't as lucky. Her "they're just hands" comments once again led the women into a discussion about whether Leanne was threatening her co-star.